Breaking news, Justin. Breaking news. And by that, I mean this piece of news is 13 days old.
Oh, that's, I mean, that's pretty current, depending on when you look at it. You know,
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's basically today.
Yeah,
right.
I mean,
it happened this minute. If you look at all things. Okay. All right. I'm just going to read you this tweet directly.
Okay.
And by the way, this was supposed to be an intro several weeks ago. And then
about 13 days ago.
Yeah, two episodes of these ago.
Yeah.
And then more interesting things happened. So that sort of tells you what's going on this week. This is from a discussing film. The Rock says when he went to see Oppenheimer in IMAX, he chose to sit in the same seat that Christopher Nolan uses to watch his films. This is a quote from The Rock. I was thinking, holy shit, Red One on this screen with this technology. It's going to be game over. It's the end of his quote. It says, the film has a 36% on Rotten Tomatoes.
So he watched Oppenheimer in the same seat, or he watched Red One in the same seat that Nolan watched Oppenheimer?
He watched Oppenheimer in the same seat that Nolan uses when he's like screening his films, like to like watch them to make sure that the cut is good.
Got it. What is that seat? Is it like
just in the
front
middle,
row?
I guess. I don't know. Like
front row?
Like,
breaking your neck?
Nolan, what's your secret? Nolan, what is your secret? But just, I fucking love the idea that The Rock went and saw Oppenheimer and his first thought was like, holy fucking shit. Red One, my Christmas comedy with Chris Evans and I think Michael Keaton. Like, this is on par with Oppenheimer.
Okay, first of all, I know that movie's probably shit, as the ratings would tell you. Totally want to see that in theater.
It seems like it is not a... I would not look at this movie and be like, I gotta see Red One. You know what I mean?
I don't know if I gotta see it, but I like want to see it. You know what I mean? I will not watch this in my house. The only way I will watch this is if I'm in a theater, bucket of popcorn, my mini Starbursts.
This is absolutely correct. You are absolutely correct.
The only way. And it looks stupid enough that I'm sure I'll get at least some fun out of it.
I bet if you went with the right people, it would be a fun time.
Yeah. But also, I don't necessarily disagree with the comparison to the critically lauded Red One and Oppenheimer, man.
You don't disagree with that? You think that's a similar?
I think they're on the same par. Let me go on Oppenheimer for a second.
I know you're not like interesting a huge film. Oppie head.
They needed a woman to consult on that script. like a single woman would have been really helpful, I think.
But
to,
just,
like,
there were two women in it.
It's not that there were women in it. It's that the women should have been like on the script writing team, being like, let's try to make
but Justin,
this a little.
There were two whole women in it. Two whole women in it, the whole movie.
And boy,
in fact, there was a third one, Juno's fucking friend. Forgetting her name. She was also in Dread as the psychic girl.
No.
She was also in it, I believe.
Okay.
Or maybe I'm wrong. Am I wrong?
There's probably a couple of women in there.
Oppenheimer cast. Just gonna scan for women. No. It was not her friend, was it? Oh, it was. Olivia Thirlby. Olivia Thirlby.
I'm pretty sure it did not pass the Bechdel test.
What are you talking about? There's two women in it.
But were they talking to each other about something other than a man?
Justin, there were two women in it. It's women all over it.
The women have to talk to each other about, I don't know, something that's
else.
Not a man.
Yes.
Instead of
Oppie. No. Oh, Oppie. I would say no, they did not ever speak. And if I'm remembering the plot of Oppenheimer, I think it was his absolute intention that they should never speak.
Yeah, it's kind of like the plot detail between them, like the one thing there. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, man. So Red One. fuck, man. I'll say this. There's some movies in my future. Movie number one.
Red One.
We got it. I got to see Wicked. Me and Elena are going to go see Wicked.
Cool.
I know that you, again, dude, what is it with you and these universally beloved things? I know you are not a Wicked head. I'm excited to see this movie. I adore Wicked. And initially, Elena was like, Peter, this movie's going to be bad.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
But she has now said that, hey, people who are seeing this, like, actually say it's very good.
Yeah, and I know even, like, people, like, my wife isn't the hugest Ariana Grande fan.
Sure.
Just for whatever reason. People are saying, even not fans of Ariana Grande, and she's pretty good in the film.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I'm forgetting the name of the other lady. Who plays Elphaba.
That's the blue one, right?
Yes, that's the blue one. And then Elena wants to see Gladiator 2.
Same double feature.
It's the longest day of our lives.
Do you know how they have on television, like streaming television, they have like the two games that you can like switch between audio from and like listen to both of them or something like that. Like for a football weekend on YouTube TV, I can watch two games and like select. You could do that with the movie. You can have Wicked on like one screen. So whenever like they are talking or singing or there's really any part of the movie that's going on, you can just listen to the other movie, Gladiator, while the Wicked just in the background, no one paying attention to it.
I don't remember who it was. Someone on YouTube watched, I think, four Transformers movies at the same time by splitting it into quadrants.
Yeah.
And they just had four screens, like, so that you could see the whole thing at the same exact time. Maybe we should consider doing that with our Wickedator? Wickedator 2? Or would it be Gladiated?
I like both, actually.
Both are actually pretty
Gladiated
good.
Gladiated
and Wickedator.
Wickedator.
Too.
Yeah, the Wickedator. I kind of like the Wickedator.
You know what I like more than that?
What?
Hitbox. What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Hitbox episode number 221. My name is Peter Hunt Spitek. Joining me, as always, is my wonderful friend and co-host, Justin Makovich. Justin, how are you? Happy holidays. Coming up on Thanksgiving.
We've made the Thanksgiving holiday, and to honor the Thanksgiving holiday, I got a new fresh haircut going on?
I do. New fresh haircut. Really nice.
I've been going through a couple of hair things in my day. So during the pandemic, I was doing the homebrew. I would do some of it. Claire would do the parts I couldn't see. Let's just say after about 2 years of that, I looked ragged, you know?
It was a tough time for us all.
Tough time for us all. It was fine the first couple months, but then it progressively got worse. So then I started getting very expensive haircuts. Like, we're talking like $90 a haircut that I would get every 4 weeks. And I'm a public teacher, everyone, and I make pretty good money, but I don't make that kind of good money. You know what I mean? There are other things I can do with that $90 every 4 weeks. Like, I don't know, rent. Then I started going to someone who's a little bit more affordable, nice personal person. It was like a barber kind of situation, like a, you know, one-on-one little mom and pop shop kind of place. But like, he would never do what I asked him to do. And I'm too polite to like confront a service industry person about that. So you know how I confronted him? I just made an appointment, canceled, and never have shown up again. Just
never saw him again. Yeah,
so now I'm doing the Rolodex of sport clips again.
Oh, don't do that. Justin, don't do that.
Today, I won. I won the sport clips.
I will say you look very nice.
And like, I was like watching, like there was like three people working and I had my horse that I was waiting for. I was like, I need this person. You could tell she was taking way too long on everyone. Just like going, you know, like that
counting
extra pass in the back.
Layers.
And then I'm getting frustrated, not because I didn't want her to take her time, but if she took too long, then I wouldn't get her. So I was like, all right, you got to take just long enough. It's a window in there. So I lucked out for the first time ever. I lucked out at the sports clips and I got the good haircut person there. But have you been to like a sport clips recently?
I mean, recently as in when I was in high school. So about 10 years ago. Yeah.
So they do it when you have to make an appointment on your phone.
Oh, okay.
Like before you go in. I mean, I guess you could
can't
go
just walk
in. But if I looked at my phone, it was like an hour and 20 minute wait.
Got it.
And I mean, it's like a holiday time before there. So like I'm putting in there an hour and 20 minutes and then they're like, be there 5 minutes early. But like the time is constantly fluctuating between go in now and another 20 minutes. I literally came in there. There was 2 minutes on there. A guy walks in front of me. My 2 minutes go to 22 minutes because he checked in before me.
Oh, that sucks so hard.
I know. And there's no rhyme or reason to it or anything like that, but whatever. I got a haircut. It was a process. It was a good Rolodex, but if anyone out there is listening and lives in the general suburb area around IKEA, I'll use that, around an IKEA.
The southern IKEA.
The southern IKEA. If you have a affordable, convenient place for me to get my hair cut, that's fine. My almost brother-in-law, his mother does it, but you know how I am with confrontation. What if she doesn't do it right?
You can't just ghost her. Yeah. I've got, if you want, what is an affordable haircut for you?
I spent $40 at Sport Clips, which to me is crazy, isn't it?
Yes, because I spend $60 on my haircut.
Okay.
And that is, I'm giving like a 50% tip, just because I like my girl Carly a lot. I trust her with these locks, you know?
Yeah.
She's right down the street from you. Should you be interested?
All right, give me a place. Give me an address.
It's in the strip mall with Sushi City.
Oh, okay. All right. Wow. Dinner and a show.
Yeah, exactly. Every single time I go, by the way, I always check, because I'm always worried that thing's going to close down, because it's in the middle of nothing. Sushi City is like, there's just nothing on either side of it. At least I think. And I'm always like, please, no, they can't take they can take everything else from me, but not this, please.
Oh, once Two Toots left, I was very concerned.
I know. And the Toys R Us, I mean, that's been gone for years at this point, but...
Wait, do you go to the Petco?
I do not go to the Petco. Although I do believe they do grooming there.
Curl Bar?
It is the... I think it's called Posh Salon.
Ooh, okay. I used to... Ooh, it looks posh as fuck in these photos.
Yeah, it is the Posh Salon Suites. It's right next to the Laundry World.
Oh, okay. I used to go to a place in there, Daniel Stevens. That was the place I used to get my hair done at back in the day when I was a child. The Daniel Stevens.
I see. I'm familiar with the Daniel Stevens. But Carly's great. I mean, if you're looking for a consistent person who does good hair.
All right, cool.
Yeah,
I'll talk to him. The free advertising too. She should give you a discount next time.
Oh, and here's the thing. She has saved my hair on so many occasions that I honestly owe her thousands of dollars. like the services that she has done for my look, I owe her. I went to her the day before I went and proposed to Elena, and I'm so fucking glad I did, because I did interviews with developers at MIGS the day before that, and the videos of me, I was having like a hair day that must be seen to be believed in terms of how bad it was.
Fortunately, like, you had video footage of it, so
it's I'm a little mad that no one said, "Hey man, do you want to fix that?" it is embarrassing how bad I look. And so like, I'm so glad that I got to see her, because if I had had that hair, I think I was using up my bad hair days for the week, which I'm glad I did. Arguably the much more important day. But Justin, let me give you a quick preview of what's coming up in the news. We got a big week of Sony news this week, with the main story being that Sony might be acquiring From Software. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Also, the Golden Joystick Awards results are finally in. We're going to talk about those headlines more, but before we do, I would like to tell our listeners that they can join our Discord server. They can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer, like Jay Noel, like GKS, and like Josh Durham. Every single week, those deluxe podcast producers get an additional 30-minute bonus episode. This week, we are talking Thanksgiving foods. We're doing a bracket. I truly cannot express to you how excited I am. I'm very curious about where you fall with all of this, Justin. But if you can't support us there, that's fine. You can also follow us on Twitter at HitboxPod, or rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, you want to join me in the Metacritic Roundup?
Yeah, let's go over there.
Metacritic Roundup.
We have two games in the Metacritic Roundup this week. The first, Microsoft Flight Simulator. Woo! 2024. This game scored an 81 on the PC, boo! And it's unscored on the Xbox Series X.
Boo!
Justin, it's on your fantasy team.
Fucking boo!
I'll be honest, dude. An 81 on PC is way better than what I was thinking this game was going to get based off of the early sort of like pieces that were being written about this. Because to my understanding, no one got this game early because it is a game
sign.
That
great sign.
Requires, well, it requires like servers and stuff like that. Because while there's the content of the game is in the game, you are actually being streamed high detail versions of the areas that you're going over, which is actually a very, very interesting, like, way to make the game work. You know what I mean? So it's like way easier on the hardware. And to be honest with you, I think that is a really interesting use of the X Cloud. And, you know, we know that Hideo Kojima is working on a game using the X Cloud. And so something like that might be something that he might use to increase the fidelity of it. Do you understand what I mean in terms of like streaming stuff to you?
Mm-hmm. I just looked at the Open Critic score.
Yeah, how is it? Like
73.
yes. Yeah, go ahead.
I think the streaming thing is, I don't want to say the future, but I honestly think that's what people are building towards. And eventually,
it's an interesting piece of tech.
Yeah. Eventually, I would say internet will catch up to a lot of this cloud stuff. I think right now it's still a luxury for a lot of people.
Yes.
But it is quickly getting to a point where once the internet is better, these companies are going to have it made with all they have.
100%. And it's unfortunate that this game specifically kind of had the rocky launch that it did. So part of the reason why it scored so poorly, poorly is even the wrong word to say. Like, it scored just fine.
73.
Lots of 8s out of 10s, and even a 7 out of 10 is fine enough, right? But I think like one of the big reasons was this game was unplayable at launch because the servers were down. And so you just like simply couldn't play the game. So people were spending hours waiting in queues and stuff like that. And then when you did load in, there were a lot of like, no pun intended, a lot of like crashes and stuff like that. So like you just weren't able to play the game. And so like the tech was broken. It's interesting tech as a concept, but in terms of actually being like usable and playable, like it just didn't stick the landing. Again, no pun intended.
Yeah. I would say, so my disappointment, I do think even though it is an 81/73, I think that is a disappointing score because the original game scored a 92 on Open Critic.
The 2021?
Yeah, the 2021. And like 98% of critics recommend it. And I think for a game like this, it's 4 years later, the game is worse performing, worse yeah. itself, and didn't do enough to justify it. I think that constitutes to me as a disappointment. Even with all the updates to it, the game itself is not that kind of quality that the first one was. I mean, I was expecting a drop off to a certain degree, but not like this. And I know part of it is the tech reason. And to be clear, both the Open Critic is based off of how many here? The Open Critic is based off of 5, and the Metacritic is based off of 4. So there's not that many. I mean, there's 7 reviews between Xbox and PlayStation on Metacritic. So there's still a small number. I am interested to see how much the number drops once more outlets.
Well, but the question is it going, like, with a game like this, if I may peel back the curtain a little bit, the reason why you wait on something like this is because if you did not get a code early to access the game, you just aren't going to have a review up at embargo. So there's just not a huge reason to like rush out and do that. And then like if the game is just busted and broken and stuff like that, like it's just like not playable at the current time of writing. Like sometimes it's just like, we're just going to wait until you can actually play this game. Because if the servers are having issues, like that is not going to like hold up as a review. You know what I mean?
You have to re-redo it. I mean, right now,
yeah.
the ones for PC are Jux Video, Gaming Bolt, Cog Connected, and Arijugones are the review places. No shade on them, but they are not like our bigger outlets.
Right. They're not, you know, the big dogs. Because also, if you think about like, well, everyone else is really busy with end of the year stuff. You know, people are playing Indiana Jones, I have to imagine, because that comes out what, next week or something like that. There's all sorts of other things going on that are just a little bit more pressing than this game right now. I'll say that the user score on Metacritic, 3.5, And Control F, not a single use of the word woke.
Are you sure it's nothing in the DEI stuff? Are you sure about that?
DEI, nope, nothing. So congratulations, Metacritic users. You're on thin fucking ice.
Oh, I hate that. That's funny.
I know. Next game in the Metacritic Roundup is Stalker 2, Heart of Chernobyl. Scored a 73 on the personal computer and a 75 on the Xbox Series X. Justin, I had a week of video games that I am calling a triathlon. In that I tried a bunch of fucking games.
And Stalker 2 was one of them.
And I downloaded Stalker 2 on my Xbox. I played about 30 minutes of it, and then I turned Stalker 2 off.
I heard it was a mess, technically. Is that true?
Yes and no, and also yes. So I think I would like to say this first. This is a game that if there is a single game to give the developers benefit of the doubt and also just like a pass, it is this game. This was developed in a war zone in Ukraine, if you remember, which is why this game took so long to come out. So, like, the circumstances regarding the development of this game are extremely strained. And it's a miracle, I think, that this game came out at all. That said, the reason I stopped playing was because for two reasons. The first is that there is no stick dead zone compensation. Do you know what that is?
Is it like trying to make up for the controller versus mouse and keyboard?
It's to compensate for like controller drift. So like for like stick drift. So if your controller has even the slightest bit of drift, you know, your game is going to pick up on that. Whereas and most controllers do. And so if your controller isn't like a brand new controller, there's going to be a little bit of drift, but most games have something called dead zones, which basically means like if your stick is in, you know, the like generally in the middle of the sort of like pot, then it's not going to register that as being moved. It's just a way to like account for people having like joysticks that are a little drifty, right?
Okay, that makes sense.
This is a very extremely common feature that most games have, to the point where it is very, very noticeable when a game doesn't have it. And Stalker 2 Heart of Chernobyl does not have that as a feature. And my Xbox controllers aren't even like drifty. Like, I wouldn't even say that they drift. But Stalker 2 sure thinks they do. So aiming and just like walking around is kind of a nightmare in that game. And then also I tried to play it. I tried to say, you know what? I'm going to try and press on. And you basically get dropped off in, I believe it's called the zone, where like all the radiation and stuff is, in the middle of the night. You go to like a laboratory, you find a guy, and then you have to go like do an experiment outside. And then I got killed by an invisible giant ghoul that I had no way of seeing because again, he was invisible. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I did something wrong there. Reloaded a save, super long load time, whatever. Reloaded a save. Did it again, got killed again, and I was like, okay, there's got to be something that I'm doing wrong here. I killed the ghoul because I was like, I'm ready for this motherfucker now. And then I went to his second area and got killed by a second invisible ghoul. And I said, you know what? Fuck this.
All right. So just to be clear, this invisible ghoul was not supposed to be invisible?
No, he was supposed to be invisible. They just like go invisible and come back. Like it's just like they're mutated, basically. Oh. But it was just like extremely frustrating to fight. And I'm like in the middle of doing like a little science experiment. And I'm like in the tutorial of the game. And I'm just like, what is this? This is nothing. I do not like this. Thank you very much, Stalker 2.
Okay. So do you think they could do stuff to fix it?
From what I've heard, it's just really buggy.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you can squash bugs. And also, again, like the circumstances for this game's development, I think it makes sense that there might be some issues there. I think that they certainly can. I know that like this is the type of game that like there is a huge community for because immersive sims and stuff like that are and like hardcore survival games are kind of like few and far between. But I didn't really encounter any major bugs. I just didn't like the game that much. You know what I mean?
So is this, would you say, a survival game? Like straight up? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
You have to like eat, and like if you like take too much damage in one hit, you like bleed, and so you have to like use bandages and like worry about your carry weight and like all that, and like make sure that the bullets you're picking up are for the weapon that you have, stuff like that.
I hate that.
I mean, it's interesting.
Well, I'm sorry. If you like that, that's totally fine. Those kind of games stress me out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I tell you, I don't need more stress in my life. This literally happened to me this morning. I woke up and it was light out and I had work today and I just screamed, fuck, I was overslept, right? My wife wakes up, my dog starts barking, and then she's like, what's wrong? I'm like, oh my God, I'm late. She goes, it's 4 a.m.
Yep.
And you know why it was light on? Because our room Christmas tree was on and I forgot to turn it off at night. So it was like just fully illuminated in the room. And I then couldn't sleep because I was up and my heart went from zero to what the fuck, right?
Yeah.
So immersive sims, again, if you like that kind of game, that's enjoy me.
Yep.
Stress, I literally woke up screaming this morning. So I don't think...
I don't know if Stalker 2 Heart of Chernobyl is going to be your thing.
Yeah.
I wish I liked it because I think that there is a, you know, potential, like I think there's the potential for me to be into this sort of thing. But let me just read you this excerpt from a 4 out of 10 review from VGC. Stalker 2 could be a great game in a few years, but what's presented at launch is a technical mess that doesn't capitalize on its best ideas. Compelling side stories and a brilliant setting do a lot of the heavy lifting, but at launch, Stalker 2 is an adventure we'd fully recommend embarking on. And there is a, I'll just read you this single sentence from this review, user review by Dutch S5, 4 out of 10, corrupted save game after 40 hours. That alone, to me, I'm like, nope, no thank you.
Yeah, that would stop me from wanting to do this. Were there difficulty settings, or is it just like, this is it?
I don't remember. Oh, there's three. There's like easy, there's like story and the medium and then like hardcore.
Oh, okay. All right. I mean, it's on Game Pass, correct?
It is, which is why I downloaded it, because it was like, well, might as well give this a shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a huge game. It's like 140 gigs. It's fucking big.
Yeah. I'll add that to all the games I got to play this year.
Yeah, and I mean, again, like, I think it would, like, totally fit in with, like, the mindset that you're in right now. But just, like, waking up screaming is the Stalker 2 experience. Justin, can I tell you about the other games in my triathlon?
I'm kind of excited, to be honest.
Let's start with the one that I think you're going to have least to say about, and the least conversation about.
All right.
Rise of the Golden Idol.
Oh.
I got a code for Rise of the Golden Idol. Thank you, Xbox. Played it on the Xbox. This is the sequel to The Case of the Golden Idol, which is a not point and click adventure game. It's like a you're covering your face.
I thought this was Indiana Jones.
Oh, you thought I was being cute in our
No, I'm just an idiot. No, I didn't think you're being cute. I thought that was the name of Indiana Jones. I got so excited. And then you started with Rise of the Golden Idol. I'm a motherfucker. I'm so excited about you talking about this. They gave you a code for it? Is it embargoed?
No,
I got so excited. Now, tempering expectations, I am now back to realizing what this is. We looked at it.
Way less interesting.
Way less interesting. You are correct. You were right. You were right.
This is a puzzle game, a detective game, where basically there are, I believe, 15 scenarios to solve in the game. That basically what it is you are given like one or two static images. It's like a moment captured in time. And there's like question marks over a bunch of things that you can click on. And when you click on those things, you get a little bit of information about those things. And it adds the words revolving around those things to your sort of like inventory. And what you have to do is basically do Mad Lib style puzzle solving to figure out what exactly is going on in the scene. And so like the first, I don't know, like three quarters of the game, there's like multiple puzzles within each puzzle. The ultimate puzzle that you're trying to solve is the full Mad Lib about like, this person did this because this happened. And when they did that, this happened. It's like six sentences long about like what is going on in the scene. And then there's these sub puzzles that sort of help you figure out what exactly is going on. For example, for the first like three quarters of the game, one of the sub puzzles is just figuring out everyone's first and last names, just like the identities of who these people are. And then it'll be stuff like there's like one that's like an auction. So who bought what at the auction for what price? And then like, what is the like who came over to this person's house? Because like you don't see them, but there's like voicemails and there's multiple people who could have come over and there's like different signs leading to who came over. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah.
And so it's very interesting because the puzzles require a fair amount of additional thought. For example, there's one that takes place at a local talent show. And one of the things that happens is, spoilers, is the magician poured a bottle of orange soda into a trumpet because the magician and the trumpet had beef. And the way you would, yes, go ahead.
You said a sentence that I need to clarify on.
Mm-hmm. There's a magician, there's a trumpet player.
And there's, oh, the trumpet. I thought the musician had beef with the trumpet.
No. The magician does magic.
Right.
Has beef with a trumpet player.
I thought you just said the physical musician. Object of the trumpet. And I was like, oh, God.
No.
All right. I'm back in.
So you kind of have to intuit that the two have a history. But then figuring out what happened with this orange soda basically just comes down to the fact that if you look at the physical drawing of the trumpet, there is like orange soda on the mouthpiece and on the bell. So like the game doesn't lead you to know that, you know what I mean? There isn't any like observation of like, huh, that's interesting. Although there's a clue system that like can give you the answers and stuff like that. I didn't really use that very much. Cause I was like, I'm an adult. I can figure this out. But like there's what I'm saying is like, there is, you have to sort of like really be looking for, details, if that makes sense. I liked it. I finished the whole thing.
Oh, okay. How long did it take?
Probably 10 hours or so.
Damn. Okay.
It was a good beefy puzzle experience. I unfortunately cannot recommend this game on consoles at the very least. The game is broken. The game is just fucking broken on consoles and it just doesn't work particularly well. It does that thing that like a lot of games do nowadays where like you just have a cursor that you move around with your thumbstick, you know, because on PC you're just using a mouse to click on stuff, whereas on console like they didn't know what to do with that, so you just use the thumbstick to like very slowly move the mouse around. It's like so slow to move this mouse around. Or you can use the D-pad to like select individual items, but there's no rhyme or reason for what moving the D-pad to like the left or right is going to do. Like sometimes it moves it directly to the left, sometimes it'll go up to the left. Like it's really not the way to play this kind of game. And just using those things is very, very, very clunky, to the point where you're just like getting frustrated because you're not able to like drag the names into the right spots and the Mad Lib stuff and things like that. Also, the game requires you to basically, there are like clusters of three or four puzzles that you need to solve. It tells an overarching story about the rise of the golden idol, which is this magical artifact basically. And so once you've solved like three or four of the puzzles, it'll give you like those three or four puzzles will all be set up around the same time. So it'll kind of like give you a snapshot about what happened in the year 1977. And then it'll jump 3 years later and then 2 years earlier. And so it like kind of just like paints the full picture. But once you solve the number of puzzles in each cluster, it will ask you overarching questions about what has happened within the three puzzles. However, the command to switch between the puzzles is broken. So if you pull up the menu to switch between the puzzles, the cursor just does not appear. It appears for about half of a second. And so in order to do this, you have to hit the button and then very quickly, like within half a second, like down,
frame perfect. It's like you're speed running this game.
Yes. And yeah. it's not fun, and it's broken and doesn't feel good. Additionally, the final fucking puzzle, spoilers, has a typo in it. And the problem is the game is a Mad Libs puzzle. So you are filling in the puzzles, like the words that are needed. And so one of the words has an issue with its conjugation. So there's no way that you can get it right unless you are purposefully getting it wrong. Does that make sense?
Is it one of those things where you can like keep trying until it's telling you it's correct, or do you have to like get it right organically with everything and just...
So there's three things you can do. You can, one, just get it right on your own. You can, two, get it right. And if you get like a certain number of things correct, it'll tell you if you have two or fewer things incorrect. And at any time, you can just click to see how many things you have correct or incorrect. You have to have everything filled in to do that. But like you can see like, OK, this is right. This is right. This one thing is wrong. This one thing is wrong, which is really helpful. That's what I used. And then there is a clues system that will help you arrive at the conclusion yourself instead of just telling you what to do, which I think is kind of cool.
So besides the grammar part at the end there.
Yeah.
Is the game with a different control set something you would recommend?
I think so. If you're a puzzle fan, I mean, this was not a puzzle game that like this game scored really well. And everyone's saying like, this is one of the best puzzle games of the year. And I'm like, motherfucker, did you not play Lorelei and the Laser Eyes? This does not even come close.
Just to be clear, an 85 on Metacritic currently. Yeah.
And it's a fun enough little puzzle game, but it's not one that I'm ever going to really think about. I'll play the sequel when it comes, you know, if they do another one, I'll play that. But like, it's just not a game that like,
isn't there like an original, like a first one?
Yeah, this is the second one.
Okay,
So I'm not rushing. Like if this game were like on par with like my favorite puzzle games, of course I would go and play that other one. This is not that. So I'm not going to go out and play the first one right now.
Again, I would recommend that you try to play the first one on the iPhone, on Netflix.
Yeah, because the second one's on Netflix as well.
Yeah, so, and the reason I just say that is because a lot of this stuff is resolved with the touchscreen. That way...
Have you played the first one?
I've only clicked through it a little bit. I haven't actually done it. I downloaded it on our episode, and then since then just kind of like clicked through it and was like trying some of the puzzles and stuff like that. But it is pretty convenient to do the touchscreen things, and I was worried that as we were doing it, the puzzles themselves would be small. And to be clear, the font is a little bit tiny. You can't even see that.
I see it
on your phone. It is a little bit tiny, but at least I have good enough eyesight that it's not unplayable. Even with,
and luckily too, with a phone being as small as it is, I mean, you can like hold that right up to your face and if you need it.
Yeah, you also don't have a fucking growth on one of your eyes.
Yeah, are you okay?
Everything's still blurry, you know what I mean?
I get it. I've gotten to the point where I just need to wear my glasses every single day now. Because now that I've seen the light, my eyes are like, gonna try that hard anymore.
Are you familiar with Bottles from Banjo-Kazooie?
I'm not.
He's a like a mole that has like very thick glasses. They call him Bottles.
Oh, I've seen this guy, yeah.
Yeah, so like that's the kind of glasses I would need to give me a slight improvement. Not even like correct the problem. I could see like a little bit better.
Yeah.
So I don't need that.
Yeah, I get it. Sorry to hear it.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Hellblade instead?
Oh yes, do it.
So I beat Rise of the Golden Idol, and then I immediately started Hellblade 2, and I played the whole thing in two sittings.
You asked me something concerning while you were playing it. You asked if I had any audio issues, to which I said no. And I was like, this is literally like the whole point of the game, and it's worrisome that you're having audio issues. So tell me about your experiences, and I'm guessing it's not great.
So I played it in two sittings, and I'm mixed. I'm very mixed on this thing. The first sitting I did not play with headphones on. And then the second setting, you know how like all video games now start and they're like, this game is best experienced with headphones on in a sensory deprivation chamber. And you're like, okay,
all right,
I know what a video game, I understand that we're trying to do these like immersive experiences. I get it. I had this issue where every single time there were like frame rate issues, like not issues. I didn't have frame rate issues, but like this game runs really well. But when it's not running at either 60 or 120, I don't know what it is, when it dips a little bit, there's this like audio crackle and stutter. So basically, anytime you transition areas or doing combat, the audio is like making this like popping, crackly noise. And I tried two different controllers. I tried two different headsets. Like, I was like, what? It's the game. Or maybe my Xbox. I was doing all sorts of research about like, what is this problem I'm having? And like, no one else had this issue, which again, as you mentioned, like one of the things about this game is that it has this extremely it's just got really great audio design, which we can talk about it as well. But like, it was one of those things where I was like, my second session with it, I was already kind of not on board with the game. And I was like, Justin, is this game that is being lauded as having the most incredible groundbreaking audio ever, is the audio all just broken? Am I like, is this really what we're doing right now? Which, as you said, it was not your experience with it, but.
Yeah. I mean, I got this, it's a Debug Cloud YouTube channel. It's a video about ways to fix it on the computer, with restart your computer, Vario audio input, update your audio drivers, run audio drivers, like that kind of shit. So like, again, it seems like a very specific sound. However, it is, that is like a barrier for you getting into this game, because no matter what, I mean, the game's not perfect, don't get me wrong, but like, you add any sort of like barrier like that to it, it's going to kind of ruin your experience for it, specifically a game that's meant to be like all encompassing 3D audioing you.
That's the whole thing, right? Yeah. Where I'm like, there's nothing to this game already. They had to pad out the controllers, the controller options. So like, when you put press pause, it like gives you all the controls. And I think they were embarrassed of how few things you could do in the game. So they padded out by adding on the thumbstick, up is walk up, down is walk back, left is walk left, right is walk right. And then they padded it out twice by saying the same thing about the camera movement on this one. And both of the triggers do the same thing. So they just pad, like there's like nine different things on this controller, on like the controller options for like what you can do. And I was like, you guys were embarrassed that there's nothing to this game. But yeah, you're right though. Like, this game is like billing itself on being this like immersive experience. And then I'm sitting here like troubleshooting this audio issue for like 15, 20 minutes. And to the point where I just gave up and I was like, I'm just gonna have to deal with this and just let it be what it is.
This is my life now.
Yep. Yep. But yeah, so I played all of Hellblade 2 for you, Justin Makovich.
Oh,
I
did don't it for say you that. Don't say that.
So that we can talk about it. And then also because I imagine it's going to be potentially discussed in the next few weeks here for Game of the Year stuff.
Yeah, I mean, just to be clear, everyone, I have not played that many video games this year. So my list is going to not be very
I would like to say this too, if I may interrupt you for just a moment.
Yeah, no, please.
I not defensive, but like, you're getting like not even embarrassed, but like I worry that you think that I hate this game.
No. It's there are flaws with this game.
Yeah.
And I know the fact that you dealt with that flaw does not yes. help the rest of the game, because the rest of the game, like, there it's fine.
It's thin. It's thin.
But there are some good. The good is good. The bad is, well, there's no bad, but there's just.
Is there no bad? There's no bad?
I mean, the puzzles.
Okay. I liked this game, but I only liked it about at the very end. When we got to the end, I was like, okay, this has been kind of an interesting journey here. But I wasn't in love with this thing. I don't think it's bad. And I think that the people who like it, like, I see what they like about it. And like, the people who love it, like, I can kind of see that. It's just like, wasn't exactly for me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Talk to me about what you liked first.
I mean, it is like stupid fucking pretty. Like, it looks really good. Now, that is a pro and a con, in my opinion. I'm actually working on a video about that. Here's the thing, Justin. I played this game and I was like, I have actually so many thoughts. I have to make two videos about this. So I'm making two videos about it. But like, it is like breathtakingly gorgeous. Again, I think that works against it in some places, because it forgets to be a game sometimes. And like you don't know where to go, because you're like, there's no path forward, because you're like exploring natural rock formations, and natural rock formations don't always form like incredibly neat paths. And so you're just like walking in invisible walls and stuff like that a bunch. Mm-hmm, but It looks fantastic in motion. It looks fantastic pretty much everywhere. I love the combat system, actually. I've seen a lot of people talking about how they didn't like it. I thought it was awesome, and I thought it worked really well. I don't think it would work in a longer game. But I didn't get sick of it, and every single time the combat came up in the game, I was kind of like, okay, let's do this. It's pretty sweet. And it's so cinematic. Yeah.
And adding on to it, I think they improved from the original game a little bit. Okay. It's not like vastly different from the original game, but like this felt more like I had more control in the combat rather than it was just simply like a cinematic cutscene kind of.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
And that's the thing too, is like this game, and I think, you know, this is a criticism and also a praise, like it can be difficult to know when you are in a cutscene in the combat stuff,
yeah,
because it is so fluid and is so like cinematic. I like that quality of it. I've seen a lot of people say that they don't like that, but like, I want to address this too. Like, I think there is a double standard that people run into sometimes. And I think there's nuance to this. And I could speak to this as well, but like, I've seen a lot of people say like, oh, there's no game to this. It's not a game. You know, it's just a movie. And I'm like, well, I disagree. I think it's a game, because I also like, I look at a game like 1000 Times Resist, which I loved from this year. I mean, like, there's no game to that. It's just walking around hallways. And then there's like a platforming bit every 4 hours. You know what I mean? And yeah, even the platforming is like terrible. So it's like there's no game to that. It's a visual novel for the most part. You know what I'm saying? So like, yeah. I kind of like dispute the idea of like, well, where's the game? Because like, I can't say that, because I like games that are kind of game light, you know? So I really liked the combat there. I came to like the story. It took me up until about the halfway mark, or maybe a little after the halfway mark, when you go and you meet the people in the town. I liked the story from then to the end. I thought that was good. I thought the performance was good for the most part from the whole cast. I think that's a commendable amount of things to like about this game.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that I like about this game, first of all, one of the mechanics that was like not really a mechanic of the first game, but kind of, was the whole like rot thing that happened. Like, if you died too much, it would affect your character, and they like alluded to the fact that you might have to restart it. Do you remember that?
I do. I had heard that, but that's not in this game at all, right?
Yeah, which is, as you know, screaming at middle of the night, kind of stressful boy, they don't have to worry about that. So I was able to like enjoy the game on those merits, because I think sometimes that extra layer of worry ruins my enjoyment with the game rather than just playing it. I also liked how this game was inherently more connected than the original one. I felt like it was not just her in her head. You had those moments when she was alone and loud in her head, but you also had the people around her bringing her back. And it kind of created doubt with sometimes, if like, is this person really here?
First one?
No, in this one.
Interesting.
Like, it just made me think, like, is this really happening? Is this in her head? Or is this just something that, like, she's actually meeting these people and going through with them because of kind of how the first game was? But I did, in fact, like how there were people, and it did feel like more of a world than the last one, which was just kind of like a quarter that you're going through. Mm-hmm. I agree. I think like some of the actual like the gameplay stuff with it, like the actual like moving through the world and stuff like that, is simple enough that was like fine. Like, I don't need to be challenged much more or like need that much more stuff. I don't need an open world game just to make it an open world game. The problem is, I don't know if you ran into this frustration, but you were saying how sometimes it's hard to traverse these like rocky environments with like slight walls and like what you can climb up and what you can't. Whenever we are in those puzzle zones, I got the most frustrated, not with the puzzle, but they were very linear.
Did you solve the puzzle, but it took you fucking forever to run out and do it?
Yeah,
oh my gosh.
Like, and then it's just like, because the puzzle is more so like where like traversing the place and like getting through it, that sometimes it was just like, you knew what to do and you might have been three steps ahead, but then you would go through it and it would just be like tedious to a certain point where it didn't have to be. But it felt like
if they
like
cut
it.
The puzzles out, it would have been a better game.
I agree.
In my opinion. Like I understand that okay, well then what's left? And I'm like, I don't think you like just, there's not much anyway. You know, if you cut these puzzles out, it's not like you're cutting out like a huge, huge thing from these games. I think you're cutting out a detractor.
And I might even go on top of that, they could have shortened the puzzle significantly. So instead of it being 3-4 things that you had to light up and find and move around, they could have simplified it to just one or two. So you are playing with these mechanics a little bit, but they do add mechanics every time you do it. So they're kind of building off each other.
They do get more complicated, yeah.
It's not just like it's the same thing. It is the same thing, but they add it with other mechanics that you have to by the end. It's different enough. However, that's not what I would say is the highlight of this game.
I agree. I also think like the left bumper is the sprint button. That should just be automatically on. This game, to me, this game felt a little self-congratulatory with its graphics. It wanted you to walk everywhere so you can go, oh my gosh, this looks so good. But that wears off, right? It starts and I was like, wow, this looks fucking good. And then you never think about it ever again.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Except when you get to some vista and you're like, wow, gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
Take a screenshot. And they just move on, you know? Let her run the whole time. I just held this button down the entirety of the game.
Well, I think so many of these games have these like slow ass moving characters, and there's probably a lot of reasons for that on a technical 100%.
Level. Totally.
But
it's also realistic because that's how fast we walk. But
yeah,
I think the problem with this game for me is just like, I don't want realism. Like this is too real to the point where there's no game because there can't be a game because like there's like things that you need to have in order for like just the mechanics of a game to work, you know? Mm-hmm. And as soon as you strip those away, because you have to, if you want it to be a realistic, like immersive experience, then it's just gone.
Mm-hmm.
Can I say my biggest complaint about this game?
Mm-hmm.
Two things. Thing one, I guess it's all under the blanket of, I don't like any of the like, internal, what's her name? Senua. I keep wanting to call her Aloy.
I was gonna say like they're is just, this like similar character to you.
No, I don't like Aloy. It's not that I don't like her as a character. I don't like her, and not in a likable, dislikable way. I just think she sucks. I don't think Senua is much of a character in this. She kind of doesn't have much to say. And the internal dialogue that is running, I was searching in the settings if there was a way to turn it off. I hate it so much. It is the most fucking first thought, best thought writing about just like, I understand what it's trying to do. It's trying to tell you, you give you her like internal, like running thoughts, but it's the most, it's like walking around with a 3-year-old. Anytime you see anyone, it's like, who's that? What are they holding? Is it scary? I'm scared. Senua, we need to leave. Senua, you might fall down. Don't fall. Senua, make sure you don't fall. Make sure you don't fall. Senua, what was that? And it's just like, oh my gosh, shut up. Shut up. And I know what it's, I know that like the game is like, oh, this is what it's like to have psychosis. It's what it's like to have a fucking functional brain. Because your brain's doing that all the time, right? It's like, should I be frightened of this thing? And then you're looking at it and you're like, no, I should not be. That's my friend Justin. What is in front of my face? Oh, it's my microphone. Is my microphone on? It is. You know what I mean? Like your brain is automatically doing all of that. I thought this was just annoying. And if I may, I don't think that this game is... People have talked a lot about like, oh man, like it's so much... It's about mental health. No, it's not. This is not a game about mental health. It's mental health is in it. It's not about mental health. It doesn't say anything about mental health in the same way that like, is this a game about like the meaning of violence? No, there's violence in it, but like, you know, or like the history of swords. No, swords are in it, but it doesn't touch on like any of those aspects. You know what I mean? In the way that I heard that the first one definitely does.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. My point was going to be, I think the first one is much more about her individual journey. This one, it's like that, like, not individual journey, it's like other people viewing her from a different lens, because I think it was kind of cool how you had the characters making it seem like those voices were her power.
Yeah, that you know, is interesting,
they,
right?
They kind of speak that up, but again, it's not so much, this game doesn't feel so much about her individual journey the same way that the first one really was about her and everything that she did. This one, it's kind of like, I'm here and I'm going to solve the world rather than I'm going to solve me. And I totally agree with that criticism of it. However, this is a me thing. I don't want to ever play that first game again. I would be more likely to play this game than the first game, because I think this game is way more playable than the first game.
Interesting. So, I mean, I wasn't going to go back and play the first one, because like I thought this game was fine. I didn't think it was bad. When I started, I was like, oh no, oh no. Because I like the voices I couldn't fucking deal with. Because also, okay, so here's a problem that I had. And maybe this, if you can help me understand this, because maybe it might be a thing from the first one. Every single person who dies, she has the voices like telling her that she like should blame herself for it. And like, is that just because she's just mentally unwell and just blames everything on herself? Okay. Because like for me, the way that like it came across, just it didn't come across in a way that was particularly clear or meaningful, because like she was blaming herself for a bunch of people drowning after their boat at the beginning got struck by lightning. And I was like, Senua, what could you have possibly fucking done in this situation? Like, you did great. You like, like you swam to shore like a champ. Like, honestly, no notes. It's exactly what I would have done. You know what I mean? Or like, same thing happens. Like, she arrives at this village and then she's like hanging out and like talking with everyone. And then nightfall comes and then these monsters show up and they attack the village. And then she's like blaming her, like a lady she's never seen before dies in her arms. And she's like, this was all your fault. And I was like, Senua, I think you did a fucking great job killing these things. Like, you did a great job pushing them back. And I think it would have been like, had she made a choice that would have endangered these people, or maybe if someone that close to her had died or something like that, it would have made more sense for her to blame herself. Cause it's like, yeah, like I made a choice that resulted in this thing, or like, yeah, I did rope you into this quest that I'm going on. Like, so I'm the reason you're dead. But like with this, I'm just like, I think you did a great job fighting off the monsters, actually.
Yeah, I think, again, I'm no like mental health expert specifically with this kind of psychosis that she's going through.
Yeah.
I mean, would that be like a form of schizophrenia, I would assume?
I don't know.
Again,
don't
know. I'm no expert at this, but...
I mean, like I understand like people who have, you know, sort of severe mental health conditions oftentimes blame themselves for things that are out of their control. Like 100%, I do understand that. And like, you know, there's to a certain extent, like, in a way that is illogical, right? That like, well, obviously it doesn't make sense to me, someone who can see very clearly the cause and effect of how all this shook out. But I am saying, like, from a narrative perspective, I simply don't understand why she's like blaming herself for all of this in a way that feels really kind of shallow, because like she just didn't, like, there was no reason for us to even think like, well, Senua, you did kind of do that, you know?
Yeah, this is me not like being familiar with what she's going through. I think I think it could make sense. Like, I can see it in context that this is something that she's dealing with. And like, mm-hmm. It's almost like kind of the point that you are annoyed by it is kind of the point. However,
yes.
When
however,
you're
so annoyed by
playing
it.
It and you're annoyed yeah. by it, that doesn't really invite you into that game. And again, I think the difference between the first and the second game is in the first game, she's dealing with this mental mm-hmm. health issue. In the second game, I don't want to say she's mastered it, but she's grown accustomed
to
it.
She's kind of like annoyed by it.
Yeah,
she's like, shut up.
She knows how to control it and knows that it's like this external thing that's just there in her ears and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I think all these things are valid. I think the idea of Hellblade 1 itself is a better concept in terms of like what they did. And it's like a cooler, unique concept. Mm-hmm. Hellblade 2, to me, is a better game.
Sure.
But if you know what I mean, like, even though the concept isn't there, it's more playable to me.
Yes. And I think like that's what I took away from it, where I was like, I bet this mental health stuff, it sounds more interesting in the first one. And it feels like for this one where they're like, well, I mean, it's still Senua, so she still has to have this running narrator, which, by the way, there was a third narrator. There's like an omnipotent narrator as well. Which made me laugh a little bit, because I was like, you really need a third fucking voice in this.
So but correct me if I'm wrong, listener/internet/anyone. I think that's her husband, which is the person. Is it not?
It was a woman for me, but.
Oh, then maybe
I don't,
not.
I, guess,
okay,
I don't
never
know.
Mind. I mean, I thought I just heard her husband, but never mind. Then it's not her.
Maybe in the recap, I think it might have been a man, but like in the game, the narrator was a woman. I was like, oh, okay.
Senua.
Yeah. I didn't hate it. If you are looking to, like, do you watch the movie The Northmen?
Is it about people in the North?
It is. It's about Vikings and stuff. And, like, playing this, I was like, in the combat sections especially, I was like, fuck yeah, I love The Northmen. You know what I like about this game? It has the best, like, sword penetration physics out of any video game. The first time she stabs a guy, she gets him in, like, underneath his, like, just under his armpit, and, like, it goes through him, and you can sort of, like, see sort of his body bend in with the sword. And I was like, that was fucking gnarly. And I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Hellblade 2, I have very complicated and nuanced feelings about it, but it's one of those things where like, I would probably give it like a 6 out of 10 or maybe a 5, but I don't think like, it's not a game that I wouldn't recommend to anyone.
Yeah. I'm saying like, I think this is an easy recommend with Game Pass.
100%.
You know what I mean? Like, this is the, one of those games that I think you just got to try. It's short enough that it's not going to like hurt your time. If you have Game Pass, then it's cheap enough to try it. Like, it is like one of those games that I can recommend no matter what you think about it, because I think it's interesting enough to at least try and go through.
And I think too, like, if you are the type of person who really only is into the like high budget AAA Sony third person action games like God of War or Last of Us that are like very like narrative focused, I do think that this is the sort of game that does fall in line with those. It is a little bit more experimental and less gamey than those games, but like it's certainly less meaty for certain. But I would recommend this to some people, but it is not a game that I think I'm gonna really think about a ton. Although, like I said, I am going to like, I do have a lot of like nuanced thoughts about it, which is why I'm gonna work on some videos about it, but less about like the game itself and more about like what it represents and all that.
I'm just looking again at a couple of articles talking about the schizophrenia portrayed in Hellblade, and this is from New Mexico Daily Lobo, the independent voice of New Mexico since 1895.
Dude.
And they quote in here, this article, it's a review by Kelsa Mendoza, says, game developers worked alongside psychologists such as Paul Fletcher and individuals with schizophrenia such as Eddie Maley, according to Safe in Our World. Both are from Cambridgeshire and Peterborough NHS Foundation Trust, and worked with Ninja Theory to assist in portraying schizophrenia as accurately as possible. So I still think like part of it is that they tried to make it as accurate as possible to a certain degree, having a couple consultants on it and things like that. It's Hellblade. The Hellblade games have the potential to promote empathetic understanding by accurately depicting schizophrenia and destigmatizing the condition, according to an article published in the journal JMIR Mental Health as well. So, I don't have expertise in this area, but I think it is at least they did research on it. Does it make
clear?
Does it make it an enjoyable game to play? Doesn't mean.
and I also think too, like, part of me pushes back on, can I talk about spoilers for this game?
Everyone, if you are worried about being spoiled for Hellblade, just pretend that we didn't hear
this. Pretend I'm not talking about anything. Think about something else. So like, I guess I will push back on that a little bit though, because like, I don't think that this game necessarily pushes for an empathetic view of that sort of thing. Not because of Senua, like, everyone just treats her normal. You know what I mean? Like for the most part, they're just like, are you good? You know what I mean? And she's like, yeah, I'm fine, whatever. I'm just fighting the voices. But I think that this game is trying to make a comparison between Senua and the giants, because if you remember the first time that she meets the giant, the lady giant, it looks at her and it's like, you're like me. And sort of like, they explain like, oh, she's a monster and blah, 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 blah. And then Senua is like, well, what if I use the superpower of empathy to free the giant? And then that's how you kill the giant. And I was like, that is very interesting. And I think that that works for that theme. But then do you know what happens with the second giant?
Remind me.
They throw flaming spears at it. and led by Senua. Like, Senua's like, here's the plan. We're going to lure the giant out of its cave and light it on fire. It's just like, okay. But I don't know if this plays into the empathy metaphor.
Don't you still have like a moment when you like jump into that world and like have to avoid it?
Or you do. You do, yes. But it's like, in my opinion, the first one is an empathetic sort of like, oh, like, you know, maybe it is like me. And maybe like when we face these traumatic events, we do turn into these monsters sometimes and whatever else. And then the second one, like they had to have a big action scene out of it. And so they were like, well, what if we treat it like a monster and we like light it on fire a bunch of times first, and then we can go and have the empathetic moment. But like, it's still just this whole thing about like the first one, no, that's not a monster. That's a, you know, a grieving mother. This one, that one is a monster. I will tell you that. But
I would say like empathy though is not so much about just like understanding on a academic level. It's like fully immersing yourself in that world. And I would say like the empathy about schizophrenia doesn't come necessarily with people's perceptions about it as much as you having those headphones on and hearing what it's like and being in that moment to a certain point. But I do agree. I think that the metaphor kind of runs thin specifically by the end of it, because by the time it has to get resolved, it kind of
feels
like
you're killing people with swords.
Right. And it's kind of like rushing through it. And like,
yeah.
And that is part of the bigger problem of having a game like this that's more of an external story than an internal story, is that you have to complete it. You have to.
To me, because Elena was asking about like what I meant by all of this, about like, because I sort of used that sword comparison where I was like, is this a game about swords? No, there's swords in it, but it's not like about that, you know? And I was saying, like, I think this is a story that suffers from what it has to be about, that it has to have action stuff, because I think that, like, in my opinion, or the way that its action is portrayed, because I think The Last of Us Part Two is actually a wonderful game about mental health, and it not wonderful, like it's a very deep and dark and disgusting game, right, in terms of like what it's about. But I think the way that it portrays Ellie's mental spiral, I think, is really interesting. And it does that through, you know, action and violence and stuff like that in a way that is intriguing and thought provoking, and her own journey with trauma. But like with this game, I'm just like, it just feels a little like they're like, OK, well, we want it to be about mental health and about stabbing dudes with swords. It's like, OK, it's, I don't know if that meshes 100%. But again, good game, like interesting game at the very least. Again, I would recommend this to specific people. It's not a game that I loved, but it is one that I found to be interesting and thought provoking.
Well said.
Thank you very much. And thank you for recommending I play it, because if it weren't not for you, I think I would have skipped it. Want to talk about the news?
Oh, we weren't? Yes.
Oh, Justin, I think we want to start with the big one. I think let's start with this whole FromSoft situation.
Yeah, and then we'll work backwards.
Yes. So let me hit you with some questions about companies, because I needed to do a little bit of research when this all started going down. Because I was not familiar with a whole with all of the players in this. Do you know what the Kadokawa Corporation is?
No.
The Kadokawa Corporation is a large parent company in Japan that owns a lot of shit. One of the things that the Kadokawa Corporation owns is From Software. Among other things, there's like anime and manga and like all sorts of different branches with the Kadokawa Corporation. But the big sort of headline with this is that Kadokawa is owned by owns From Software, and that Sony is apparently, according to a Reuters report,
Reuters
is apparently, quote, in talks to acquire Kadokawa, the Japanese media powerhouse behind the Elden Ring game, two sources familiar with the matter said, as the technology giant looks to add to its entertainment portfolio. So there are a lot of reasons why I think Sony would be interested in Kadokawa. Like I said, the anime, the manga stuff, like that stuff is huge right now. And then also, a little company called From Software would be added to their lineup of first party studios. I believe Sony already owns Sony already has a 2% stake in Kadokawa and a stake in Kawakata controlled From Software, the developer of the hit action fantasy role-playing game. So like Sony already does have sort of its hand in the FromSoft bucket, but, apparently, they're looking to purchase the entire company and merge it in. And then again, they would own, FromSoft as well. What do you think about all this?
I mean, it's interesting to say the least. I think at the top level, Sony can, you know, purchase whatever you want to purchase, and it seems like this is a bigger thing than them just being like, I want to buy From Software, right? Like a whole big company like that. Remember, Sony is a big company other than just video games too. So like having more things involved in its big umbrella, I'm sure, is par for the course. Now, it is interesting that From Software is in there just from a gaming perspective. I do wonder, in the future, is From Software going to be that, if they were to go through this purchase, is this a CODs on everything or CODs just on Xbox kind of situation?
Yeah, I mean, they have committed, Sony has committed to doing like Destiny expansions everywhere, right? I believe they also committed to Marathon being everywhere as well.
If that comes up.
Yep, that's a big if. yes, that is a big if, right? I think I recently, over the last year for work, looked at the sales numbers for FromSoft games. And Bloodborne was one of the lower selling games, despite its incredible popularity. And I think that just comes from the fact that it is a PlayStation exclusive title, right? Like, by limiting the number of people who can play your game, you're going to sell less games. And I think that is something that we have sort of seen. And because of how expensive games are to make, cutting out players, I just don't think is worth it. Like, you look at like Final Fantasy 16, and like Square has talked about how that game did not meet internal sales expectations, but it's also like, well, yeah, it released exclusively on a console that, like, you know, a fraction of all gamers own, and that's it, you know? So I don't think that they would make things exclusive, but I'm also not sure. By the way, I'm not necessarily like on board with this acquisition. I think I'm over all acquisitions. I think over the past year and a half, we've seen just how bad these acquisitions are for studios. Now, obviously, both of these are Japanese companies, and they have different like labor laws in terms of like what happens when you acquire a company and whatnot. But like, I don't know. I think I'm over the acquisitions. You know, so what I mean?
This to me isn't as scary as other gaming company acquisitions, because it is a parent company that they're purchasing. It's a bigger,
it's fair,
multimedia thing than it just being simply a video game company doing another video company. Because to me, if a video game company needs to be acquired, something's happening in that business that requires them to be acquired for whatever reason. Like, there's a reason why companies get acquired or sold, right? Like, they're struggling in some way. They need help in some way. And I think Xbox has shown us that this is not necessarily a sure thing. Sure, let's get Bethesda. That's going to help, right? Has it?
No. I mean, nothing. Right? Right? Like,
it's not like it's suddenly like boosted and fixed the problems with those things. We've seen all the other issues with these acquisitions about Microsoft coming in and not like fixing problems and like perpetuating some of these problems sometimes. So like, I would be worried if it was like From Software is going to get purchased by Sony, because to me, that'd be red flag city with something with From Software. Like, why would they purchase that unless they're going to overspend for something to drastically change it, or From Software needs that those funds in order to run at a comfortable way. So the acquisition part of it honestly doesn't bother me. I don't necessarily care about it in the same way because of the way it's set up. The sales number thing, I think, is an interesting call, though. Now, I just am on this article from Screen Rant, so you tell me how accurate this stuff is. And this is just numbers of some of the games. It's by Caleb Greenow, published January 19th, 2023. So not the most accurate in terms of these numbers. It's a little bit old. But just going through some of these sales numbers here, Bloodborne sold 2 million, Dark Souls 2, 3.9 million, Sekiro, 5 million, Dark Souls original, 5.5 million. Dark Souls 3, 10 million. Elden Ring, 17.5 million. And granted, like, the numbers for Bloodborne, again, this is just a Screen Rant article, so you take that there. What those numbers tell me is that things like Dark Souls 3 and Elden Ring show that the last couple things that were released, did Dark Souls 3 then Sekiro come out, or Sekiro then Dark Souls 3?
Dark Souls 3 then Sekiro.
And Sekiro's only on...
Sekiro's everywhere.
Everywhere.
So, can I give you updated sales numbers?
Yes, please.
All right. So, I did the math 3 months ago for a video. And this is across a lot of things. And I believe this is the... when we're talking about Demon's Souls, I believe we're talking about the original release of Demon's Souls, but I also don't remember. So, this could be with the remake as well.
I'm sure it's not drastically different.
Demon's Souls is 2.5 million. Dark Souls 1, and this is the original release, is 3.2 million. Dark Souls 2 original release, 7.5 million. Bloodborne, 7.6 million. So Bloodborne and Dark Souls 2 sold the same, despite the fact that Bloodborne is what I would consider significantly more popular than Dark Souls 2. Dark Souls 3, 13.8 million. Sekiro, 10.1 million. New franchise, different combat system. That makes sense. And then Elden Ring, 23.7 million. But yeah, because I think that's different from what you said, right?
It's similar, but yeah, different. My question is, though, Dark Souls 2 is on everything.
Dark Souls 2 is on everything.
And Bloodborne's not, and they sold the same.
Yeah.
Again, I don't think the where is as important as the like last two Souls games. I guess Elden Ring is technically not a Souls game. Those games sold significantly more than the other ones.
Yeah, but don't you think that like part of the reason for that is because it is everywhere? Dark Souls 3 sold almost double what Bloodborne sold, and like, doesn't that make you go like, I mean, obviously, like they're going to sell more as, you know, they make more games and get more popular, right? And people like discover it. But like, wouldn't you say that like, oh, people want to play this game, and like a significant portion of these players are going to come from those different places?
It's hard for me to tell, because I think Elden Ring is a turning point in From Software. It goes from being a niche thing to it becoming a mainstream thing. And once you start pulling things away from mainstream, I think that would probably hurt the growth of that to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. That would be my assumption. And I mean, how many Sony PS5 games have sold similar to Elden Ring? Not that many.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of the best selling games of
one of the best selling games,
and I bet this year too. From
but even on top of that, what I'm saying is that like these Sony first party exclusive games, it's not like they're selling on the same numbers Elden Ring.
Yeah,
and it is definitely the minority. Like, I don't think Spider-Man 2 sold nearly as well as Elden Ring.
No, it didn't.
Right. So, like, at a certain point, if you put it as a sole exclusive on your console, it's not like that game is suddenly going to gain more players than everything else. Like, I think it's going to limit it for sure. Mm-hmm. Which is why it would be interesting to see what they do with it, if they do acquire it, because Sony's model now seems to be those, you know, first party, fuck multiplayer, we're back to first party games. And
I guess so.
Elden Ring 2, Elden Rings would be.
Yeah, that's what I would go with.
Out of everything. Elden Souls.
I was gonna say two Elden, two Furious, two Elden, two Ring, but no, Furious better.
I'd like to do like Elden Souls. That'd be fun.
Elden Souls.
Yeah.
There's a rumor that they're gonna do Dark Souls 3 remastered, which is silly because it's a like perfectly fine, great game. Also, playing that game after playing Shadow of the Erdtree, I was like, wow, holy shit, Elden Ring is easy. Holy shit, Elden Ring, you can just like, you're the most nimble athlete in the planet.
It's like part of it, like that jump makes a huge difference.
It does. Makes a huge, it really huge does. Difference.
Like, I think that to me, the thing that saved Souls games for me or made Elden Ring playable was that jump button, because it
jump.
Truly made exploring the worlds fun.
Yeah, I would agree. But it's one of those things where it's like, oh, you're slow. Yeah. You're slow in this game, which is intentional, you know, but you're saying.
Ultimately, it'll be interesting to see what they do with this, if they do, in fact, buy it. But I would think I could see them going either way with it. And whatever way they go with it, they'll have made the wrong decision, I'm sure.
I think that's the only true understanding here. Here's something interesting, though. According to PlayStation's most recent... they did a PlayStation history, they've been doing a PlayStation history, a look at PlayStation's history with each of its consoles, because this is the 30th anniversary of the PlayStation. As you remember, they did those controllers, those PS5s, those whatever. And so for the PlayStation 2 entry, they have an updated sales number for the PS2. And let me just read you the sentence here. PS2 is one of the biggest selling video game consoles of all time, with over 160 million consoles sold worldwide since 2000. That is staggering. That is so many fucking consoles. I believe Yeah, it is the best selling of all time, according to Stealth 40K on Twitter. Number one is the PS2 at 160 million. Number two is the Nintendo DS at 154 million. Number three is the Nintendo Switch at 146 million. I mean, I think it is without question that the Switch is going to overtake the PlayStation 2, right? I mean, PS2 had what, 24 years, and the Switch is at not even 10.
Well, I don't know about that for sure. I mean, if it is backwards compatible or whatever, I think, yes, maybe that it'll have some significant legs to it.
What, the Switch?
The Switch.
Yeah.
Like, probably, I would assume, which is fucking crazy, Nintendo.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's astounding.
I mean, it truly is.
Yeah. But I mean, that's crazy. Like PlayStation 2, I mean, they were being sold brand new until like 2020. Do you remember when they stopped production? They were like, hey, we're no longer making PS2s.
We were podcasting, like, weren't we?
Yeah, I think so. And it was, they were like, we're no longer making PlayStation 2s. And you and I were like,
You're still making PlayStation 2s? Jesus.
Yeah.
I never owned one, which is a big hole in my library of gaming history. And I played it at a lot of my friends' house, but my first PlayStation was PlayStation 3, and that was at the dead end of the cycle too.
Sure. Let me help you out here. Let's see. I'm just gonna zoom. That's my nipple.
That's your nippy. What is this?
She blows.
Right. Is that a light on?
Right there.
Is that light on?
Oh my gosh, it's not. It's like reflecting from my ring light.
I was like, oh god,
on the Sony logo. I was like, wait, is it on? how do I bring you back?
Yeah. Oh.
I'll just do it like this for now.
Oh, okay.
Is that cool?
Let's get a little, real close to you. All right. Oh, I like how you did that extra zoom. There you go.
This is what you know. I normally don't have it like this because this is just like completely uncut. You know what I mean? Like whole POV. What if we went?
Oh.
Wow, wow, wow. What do you think about that?
I can't do that with my camera. Let me see what I got.
This is why I bought this video camera, by the way.
I can just zoom it. Like, look, you could be like that. I'll be like this.
I think
this.
It's just a focus. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
I like this.
So and you're really focused too.
I mean, this thing like makes me so self-conscious about my skin.
It feels like I've gotten closer to you in a weird way. You know what I mean?
It does. It feels more intimate.
Yeah.
You know something, Justin, that I like is when I can tell what the clip is going to be on Twitter when we're doing it.
Oh, this is it right here.
This is it. Yeah. Speaking of more PlayStation news, Shuhei Yoshida. He used to be, I believe, the.
I just can't take you seriously. I literally.
Do you want me to unzoom?
Okay.
My usual.
I'm gonna go back. I was like, you're trying to like say the news, and I'm like, no, here we go.
I was.
Again. Yeah.
Shuhei Yoshida, he was, I believe, once just the president of PlayStation Studios.
Mm-hmm.
During a lengthy turn as the president of PlayStation Studios during part of the PS3 and PS4 years, Yoshida-san spent years evangelizing independent developers as a head of indies innovations at PlayStation. Yoshida did an interview, and he announced that he is going to be moving on from Sony. Unclear if he's retiring or what. But January of this year, he will be leaving his role. I think he seems like he's within retirement age, I would say.
I mean, you've been doing anything for 31 years. I'm sure you're close to retirement age.
Yes, I will say this. I met Shuhei Yoshida at the Game Awards last year, which I will be back again this year, by the way.
Back at the Game Awards.
You know it.
You and Jeff.
You
and Jeff.
Yeah. I'll tell you about that when we're not recording.
Oh, God.
No, just an interaction I had with Jeff Keighley at TGA that I was like, okay. I was like, interesting, Jeff. Yoshida seems like a very nice man. I don't speak Japanese, so I don't really like, didn't really have much to say to him. Other than I took a picture of my coworker Sam. He was like, can you get a picture with me a shoe? And I was like, yeah, sure. He's like, boop. And it's like, thank you. And then left. But from what it seems, oh fuck, he talked to me once on Twitter.
Oh,
I cannot believe I forgot about this.
He slid into your DMs.
No, he was trying to tell me that I was wrong about a review I wrote. So, okay. So this is like,
all right, here we go. This is lore.
This is like the first 6 months of me working at DualShockers for the first time. I can't believe I forgot about this. I reviewed a game called The Pathless. It was a PS5 launch title. Do you remember this game? I liked it a lot.
Yeah. I played it on my Apple Arcade.
Yeah, sure. Yes, because it was on mobile as well. I think I gave it a seven or an eight. DualShockers Pathless.
Wow, he likes it better than Hellblade 2.
Yeah, I did. I gave it an 8 out of 10. And so I give my critique about the game, whatever. And then at the very end, I say, and you can pet the eagle, 10 out of 10. Metacritic, in all of its unfallible glory, did not know how to discern whether or not I gave it an 8 out of 10 as per the heading or a 10 out of 10. As per my little joke. And so a bunch of, like, when the game came out, when the embargo lifted, a bunch of those like news aggregator Twitter accounts like tweet like, here's review scores for the Pathless, like boom, 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 boom. And it was like DualShockers 10 out of 10, this place 9 out of 10, this place. And I was the only 10 out of 10 review. And then so a bunch of the DualShocker staff was like, whoa. DualShockers did not give it a 10 out of 10. They gave it an 8 out of 10. And I hopped in and I was like, that is correct. I gave it an 8 out of 10. And then someone sent me a screenshot of I'm going to find this.
Wait, Shuhei was petty like that and sent you a screenshot?
I don't know if it was Shuhei specifically or if it was at Peter Spitek Pathless.
What's X like nowadays? I haven't been on that site in a while.
Bad. Bad. How would I even find this? What's his Twitter at, do you think?
Shuhei Yoshita.
At Yospi, let's see.
At Yospi. Oh, wow. I actually typed that in correctly.
How would I search on Twitter these two things happening at the same
Elon!
Time? Elon!
Elon!
And he's like, let that sink in. Get fucked. Okay. I'm not finding this. I took a screenshot of it. It's on my laptop. I will text you about this.
Hell yeah.
But basically, someone was like, no, send me a screenshot of the video I fucking made with it has like the 10 out of 10 on it. And they were like, no, they gave it a 10 out of 10. I was like, motherfucker, I made the review.
Shuhei
tried to correct me again. And I was like, Mr. Yoshida, please, like, please. I wrote this. Look at the thing. And so now there is an editor's note. It says editor's note. Petting the Eagle is a 10 out of 10 experience. The Pathless is an 8 out of 10. So that is my experience with
so
Shuhei Yoshida.
Petting an eagle is more fun than the Pathless.
I guess in a sense, yeah.
Did you ever go to Brookfield Zoo? They had like that machine that you could like feel how like hard it was to like flap your wings if you were a thing. So I had a friend who was like a wrestler. So we all were going on it, struggling like adults, and he just goes on there, just effortlessly, just flaps his wings. And I felt real small in that moment.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Birds are fucking yoked.
My friend was also yoked.
Yeah. Like a bird?
Better.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I was going to ask if he can fly, but that was a silly question. I know he can't fly. All
right? We all can with the right ticket.
Oh, that's so true. The world is waiting. Anyway, so Shuhei Yoshida's gone, or will be leaving. Justin, the PlayStation Portal got an update for some, I think, beta testers are able to try streaming their games over the cloud, which is kind of cool because it means that, like, the PlayStation Portal is getting just more features. It's able to be used in more ways, which I think is really cool because I think that there is a possibility where Sony would have just released a second whole piece of hardware for this and tried to say like, oh, well, if you want cloud streaming, you have to buy the PlayStation Portal too, you know, but I think this is kind of cool.
Do you know how when you log on to your PlayStation, you choose from the different profiles on there?
Yeah.
So you turn on your portal, and now you get to choose from either connecting to your PlayStation or connecting to the cloud service.
That's cool. That's actually very cool.
In order to get that, there was basically a slider in the menu that said you had to opt into it or whatever, like a little switch that you opt in to do it. And then you get to look at all the cloud streaming games that they have there, and you can play it. Now, here's the thing. I don't have PlayStation Plus Premium anymore. I have the the one below it. So they got I got far enough through the list of games to be like, I don't really want to play any of these games. Let me put Skyrim in. And I went to play Skyrim, and it's like, you don't have the right account, so scan to do it in order to play it. So ultimately, it was an easy process to do, but it's really cool that you don't have to be tethered to your PlayStation in order to play that. It's completely independent of it. And as you said, it was something that in the past, I would assume, would be something that they would have another system to do, or they would make you pay for it in a different way. I guess playing for PlayStation Premium is something that you have to pay for.
But it's like most, if you're already paying for that, most likely, if you are going to be using this service, or it is an, I think it is a perfectly fair price to pay if you wanted to use this service.
And to be honest, it's more likely that I would pay for that service if I had the portal. In fact, if I don't think I'm going to go upgrade, but I wouldn't have downgraded if I had the portal.
100%.
Which I think is, hey, it's another way to add value. And I think eventually it's that foot in the door towards the streaming future. The fact that remote play is as good as it is, I think is pretty astounding. That I can play the portal in my house and it can, you know, anywhere I want, I can play my system. I think that is in of itself a success. I do have to say there is a quality dip between playing it on not just a video visual quality, but like some of the inputs. Like if I'm ever playing something like a precise game, I would prefer to play that precise game on my TV. I was playing Dragon Age Veilguard and I was doing a couple combat things on my portal. And then I went downstairs to play it on my TV and I was like, holy shit, this is easier.
this plays way better. Yeah.
So I think what I'm just doing, it's like I'm in the hyperbolic chamber in Dragon Ball Z that like kind of changes your gravity for you. Like I'm actually strengthening my gaming skills by playing with a little bit of lag here and there.
I like that.
Yeah. But I just think this is a cool thing. I'm glad it's happening. And it was kind of released without big fanfare, which I think is just them probably noticing that the portal is doing fucking well and then just trying to like play around with it in ways that they wouldn't have if it was not a success.
I would say doing well kind of against all odds.
Yeah.
Would you say like, cause this is such a specific device, you know? But by doing this, I think it makes it a way easier sell.
Yeah.
Yep. You know what I mean? I am not interested in this because I just don't need this, you know? However, this is taking another step for me going like, oh, for $200, this is actually not that bad. This is actually pretty worth it.
I mean, for me, it killed my Switch at home. Like I barely play Switch at home now because I have this and I can play my PlayStation games. And I've said this before, if there was a portal for the Xbox, I would probably play that even more than my Switch.
Yeah.
I mean, sorry, more than my PlayStation.
Just because of Game Pass and all that?
Oh my God, yeah. Game Pass, easily. I would experiment with stuff frequently. And if they had a streaming function on it, which they now do with their TVs and stuff like that, like that's even more of a reason for me to play this.
Yes. I believe all signs point to Xbox working on a handheld device, but I guess we'll see as we go along, right?
I will buy it day one.
I mean, I also like I never like to anticipate that there's going to be any particularly interesting announcements at the Game Awards because I don't think that they usually have a whole lot of stuff, especially from like the big companies, because like those companies tend to want to control the way their press goes. I think the best announcement from last year's Game Awards was that they announced Alan Wake DLC in their acceptance speech because they didn't want to pay for the trailer.
Baller. We know we're going to win this shit.
Fucking great. It could show up. Something like that could show up at the Game Awards, just because like if you remember, the Xbox Series X was announced at the Game Awards like 2019, I think. So it's possible, but Justin, let's take a look at the Golden Joysticks results very quickly. The Golden Joysticks are, I believe, in European or English. Yeah, in London. They are a London-based award show that I believe is determined by votes, right? By, like, popular vote. Is that right?
I believe so, yeah.
By fan votes, yeah. And so those took place. We're in the award season. You know, the Game Awards are in 2 weeks, or is it three? 2 weeks from Thursday. I will be there. I will let you guys know how that all went.
Jesus, the year is going by quick.
I know. But let's just, let me just read through a handful of the winners here. For Ultimate Game of the Year, Black Myth Wukong won. It was up against, you know, a whole slew of great games. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Helldivers 2, Metaphor, Silent Hill 2, Astrobot, Balatro, Animal Well, all sorts of stuff there. For PC Game of the Year, Satisfactory won. Now, you mentioned that you'd never heard of Satisfactory. This game was like a... it's a factory builder, which is like a new genre of game where it's just like you start off making a very rudimentary factory and then you just get bigger and bigger and bigger. It's kind of like Minecraft
bit. It's like SimCity.
Yeah, it's been in early access for a long, long time. And then it just recently went in 1.0. But that thing is huge, huge, huge popular. Console Game of the Year, Helldivers 2 won. I think that's a absolute. I would agree with that. I mean, like I'm happy that it won, because I think that it deserves to win a Game of the Year award from something big like this. And I just don't think, I mean, it's not even nominated for Game of the Year in TGA. Most Wanted Game, I feel like that's such a weird title, but it's like most anticipated. Grand Theft Auto 6 won. I think that's pretty clear. Best multiplayer game, Helldivers 2. Best storytelling, Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth won. A Thousand Times Resist, though, nominated. That's a good ass story.
Just,
right,
you know,
there.
Just be in the conversation. That's all they want.
Yes, I agree. I mean, they were nominated for, I think, Best Indie Game of the Year at the Indie Showcase thing that people do. Best Game Expansion. Now here's a category that I think the Game Awards could benefit from, because I'll just read you these. Like Alan Wake 2 Expansion Pass, which is the two DLCs, Destiny 2 The Final Shape, Diablo 4 Vessel of Hatred, Elden Ring Shadow of the Erdtree, that one, God of War Ragnarok Valhalla, and World of Warcraft The War Within. I think there are enough solid expansions that come out each year that this could be a category at the Game Awards. Then you don't have to, you can sidestep the whole, like, does Elden Ring get to win again? I don't know. Best Indie Game, Another Crab's Treasure. They were very excited. They were saying, like, this is their first time winning an award, whatever. Deserved. I'm happy for the team there, because I know that they are a pretty small team. Best Indie Game, Balatro. There's always, like, funny ones here. Like, Best Game Trailer. I'm like, why?
I mean, don't you care about game trailers? Ever since the Gears of War one?
No.
Come on, man.
We are familiar faces.
Yeah.
One.
The Mad
I did
World.
Like that they yeah, that's the song. They reused that song, I think, in the trailer for whatever that next game in that series is.
Dom.
Yes, Dom. Dom and what was his friend's name?
Dom
Blake. This looks like a meathead guy name, like Tony.
Tony.
Yeah. I'll say this, best lead performer, Cody Christian, won for Cloud in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I think that whole cast could be nominated.
Mm-hmm.
They were all fantastic. Let's see here. Best supporting performers, Brianna White as Aerith for Final Fantasy. Again, I think that's absolutely deserved. And I'm happy Deborah Wilson got nominated for Amanda Waller in Suicide Squad, which I didn't play. I don't know if she's great in that, but I know that Deborah Wilson is great in general. So, like, I'm happy to see that, like, sometimes you can get nominated for a thing that's not very good because you're good in it.
Yeah, I mean? I think out of all the Amanda Wallers I've seen, I enjoy hers the most.
Yeah, I love Deborah Wilson is, like, one of my favorites voice actors right now. She's great in Star Wars Jedi series. And
do you remember when she had that epic fight with in the library scene
that
was like unnecessarily difficult?
Dude, I did that for IGN guides.
You were the guide?
I was the guide. I did the video for it. You couldn't be two hits and you were dead. So yeah. I just, like, take after take after take after take.
Yeah, how many comments said that you were terrible at the game and you should just quit?
YouTube.com. IGN guides.
He's clearly playing with two hands. This guy's a loser.
Jedi Survivor. Let's see. When do you think this happens in the game? I've got the full playlist pulled up.
Oh, it's near the end.
It is near the end.
Last two-thirds in.
I'm going to say... Kobo? Dagon and Kobo Observatory?
No.
It's after that.
It's after Kobo, because that Kobo is when you fight what's-his-face for the first time, and you kill that... Hunter dying.
This playlist is missing the one episode that it's missing
the
part
one
13.
Thing that we're talking about. Yeah. Too much of a spoiler, I guess. They probably had to remove it because of all the negative comments.
Okay. Here it is. Can I say 3.4K? Two comments. What is it with Cal coming across rogue Jedi? He's encountered four of them now.
Yeah, that's true.
What am I supposed to do with the compass after the ending? Don't know what that's referring to.
The Golden Compass?
The Golden Compass. The film that the beloved film. Let's see. Anything else here? Nothing. So I think that's going to do it. Justin, do you have anything else to add before we close up here?
No. One of the highlights of that game, though, that scene. I love that game. I want to play it again. Game of the year. What did I give it last year? Was it my game of the year?
It was close, I think. What came out last year? That might have been your game of the year last year.
Game of the year.
I don't love the story in it, but I love the game of it.
Game of the year 2023. Game of the
year.
I
like the fight against the guy who's the tentacle guy who's inside the armor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's like, he's like obsessed with like honor. It was a cool thing.
Oh. 2023. My top game was Tears.
Oh, fucking obviously.
Yeah. It was my number two though, which.
Yeah. It's fair. It's great. It's great.
God, what a fucking year last year was.
Was it on my list?
It was
eight
seven.
Or nine.
Oh, no. Okay. No, I lied. Seven was our joint one. It was not on your list.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Can you read that off real quick just to see if we stand by that?
Ours or yours?
Ours.
Tears 1, Alan Wake 2, Baldur's Gate 3, Hi-Fi Rush 4, Liza P 5, Spider-Man 2, 6, Star Wars 7, Dead Space 8, Resident Evil 4, 9, Venba 10.
I stand by that.
I think that's a great list. I'd play each
100%
one of those. I'd play every one of those games.
What a good fucking list of games right there.
I mean, truly. Like, I like almost our list better than my list.
I mean, we're here. What was your list?
I had Diablo and Pikmin on there instead of... and then I didn't put Venba on. I had Tears at 1, Star Wars at 2, Hi-Fi Rush at 3, Alan Wake at 4, Baldur's Gate at 5, Spider-Man 6... Resident Evil 4, 7, Liza P, 8, Diablo 4, 9, Pikmin 4, 10.
I think I had Signalis on there. Is that right?
Signalis was the year before.
Oh, I got it. So what's my list look like?
Tears 1, Alan Wake 2, Baldur's Gate 3. You did that on purpose just to get the alliteration. Dead Space 4, Liza P, 5, 6, Marvel Spider-Man 7. Hi-Fi Rush 8, Humanity 9, Chance of Sinar 10, Venba. We both put Venba as 11.
As our 11, and that's why it was our 10.
It must be a 10.
Yeah, I agree. I think I like our joint list a lot.
Yeah, nothing wrong with our lists, but I think like...
No, but I just think we nailed it.
That's a good fucking year of games, everyone. This year,
I'm
going to
be so fucking curious what our, list looks like.
I think like there's going to be a much greater variety of games this year. And there's a lot of good games. But I think like looking at my video game tastes, 2023 was a year.
Yes, I agree. I also think that for us this year, there's going to be a lot of like sort of like admitting like this wasn't for me, but I know it was for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a big way. So like happy to throw it on there.
Yeah.
Cause like I can appreciate stuff, right? Like I can appreciate Hellblade. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think that's going to do it for us. Otherwise we're going to get too deep into our game of the year conversations, which I'm actually very excited to talk to you about this year. As I always am, Justin. But we'll catch you next week. If you're interested, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jay Noel, GKS, and Josh Durham. If not, that's fine. You can join our Discord server. You can like this video in your podcast player of choice. You can follow us on Twitter at hitboxpod. If not, that's fine. Just thanks for listening. We appreciate you so much. Justin, anything else to add?
No.
Cool. Heard. Yes, Chef. Always remember, old games are old. Bye.
Bye. We'll
I'll stop recording.